Blog Talk Radio.
Here it comes. We're alive because we want to stay alive in Tort Chaim, instructions life Tort Chesed, Tort Kindness, Tort Rachamim. Welcome to Soul Quest number 368, Secular by Design, Part 9. We're broadcasting live from Turtle Island, and everyone get ready because it's July 8th, 2014, one day after the 74th birthday of Ringo Starr of the Beatles, and we're live broadcasting from Turtle Island, the USA, unifying souls. Actually, our intent today is to focus on reading from Alan W. Cecil's seminal work, Secular by Design, A Philosophy of Noahide Laws and Observances. And we'll be starting from part one, overview page 28. If you want to come in and jam in with us, we just have a brief 30 minutes. The number is 347-838-8669. And to prepare yourself for this program, please consider the following questions. Number one, how do you look at the term faith? 2. What substance of things is hoped for? 3. What can we expect of any evidence? Number 3. Where can one's faith take one during his or her journey in life? 4. What did the nation of Israel witness over 3,328 years ago? And number 5. Question number 6. What style was the Torah written in, while specifically the intent was to reach the minds of human beings? To elicit more blessings upon yourself and your loved ones, I humbly advise you to purchase Cecil's book, easily accessible by going to Amazon.com and typing in Secular by Design, A Philosophy of Noahide Laws and Observances. And the author's name is Alan W. Cecil, C-I-C-I-L, similar to the name of Cecil Cooper, former Milwaukee Brewer, and father of Marlena Cecil, his daughter. Anyway, may we fulfill the following instruction transmitted to Joshua, son of Nun, Yehoshua ben Nun, in the book of Joshua, chapter 1, verse 7, where it reads as follows. Just be strong and very courageous to observe and do in accordance with all of the Torah that Moses, my servant, has commanded you. Do not stray therefore right or left in order that you succeed wherever you go. And we're going to turn down the music. Even though I love this music, this is Here Comes the Time, extended version from Generation Redemption album from Blessed Brother in Soul and Spirit and Prayer, Isaac Batone. I saw him at 5:45 this morning at the Blessed Famous Frankel Shul. Let's just turn on the music and get right into the shoe. Oh, sorry, Rabbi Isaac. I hate to turn on the music. We got to do something. We got to spread some Torah thoughts. And joining me live right now is, in fact, author Alan W. Cecil. Ellen, hope you don't mind me putting that warm plug and also the plug for your daughter, Marlene, because she is actively promoting our humble efforts here on Soul Class. And may all the blessings be upon her and the rest of your family for participating in disseminating knowledge which human beings, all human beings, and all humans have a divine image, need to hear about what their roles are on this earth and not what they have been brainwashed or brain dirty to think of. Any comments or concerns about what I just said?
Oh, thank you, Don. We have a really big shoe today.
Yeah. Okay, let's go right into Alan because we only have about 25 minutes left. We're going to page 28 of Alan's Secular by Design Part 1 Overview. And I'm going to read it pretty simply because the material is simple, but it should spur and inspire a lot of deeper thoughts which need to be thought of. To give an example, let's look at the religious term of faith. In Christianity, faith is described as the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. Book of Hebrews, chapter 11, verse 1. This is the definition that many of the intellectuals think of when they attack religion, such as in Sam Harris's best-selling tome, The End of Faith. Now, Alan, I have to stop here and say, I don't know what that type of faith, which is being described in the New Testament, Brit Chadashah, because I would like to give a brief focus factor, attention grabber, for blessed souls listening live. We'll hear the eventual archive version of our humble efforts today about the 13 principles of faith that were written, recorded by Rambam, of Moshe ben Maimonides, over, I think it was about 850 years ago plus. It goes like this. The 13 principles of faith that we of Israel ascribe to, believe in, and also I don't think anything here really is super rational, that I think any Ben Noah could he or she adhere to, but I'll ask Alan for his feedback on that. First, let me just read those 13 principles of faith, blessed souls. I believe with a complete faith that the Creator, blessed be His name, creates and directs all created beings, and that He alone makes, that He alone made, makes, and will make everything. Principle number two of the 13 principles of faith, I believe with complete faith that God is one. There is no unity that is any way like His. He alone is our God. He was, He is, and He will be. Number three in the 13 articles of faith, I believe with complete faith that God does not have a body and that physical concepts do not apply to Him. There is nothing whatsoever that resembles Him at all. Principle number four of the 13 principles of faith, I believe with complete faith that God is first and last. Principle number five of the 13 principles of faith, I believe with complete faith that it is proper to pray only to Creator, God. One may not pray to anyone or anything else. Principle number six of the 13 principles of faith, I believe with the complete faith that all the words of the prophets are true, and that also includes the prophetic words of the ancient prophets who precede the Israelite prophets, who have been identified by Israelite prophets in later day sages as being true prophets. We're talking about, you know, Abraham, who are, so to speak, pre-Israelite, and Isaac and Jacob, well, they are considered the patriarchs of the Israeli people, also Noah and Adam, Hanoch, Methuselah. Principle number seven is 13 principles of faith. I believe with complete faith that the prophecy of Moses is absolutely true. He's considered, from Rambam writes, as the chief of all prophets before him and after him. Principle number eight of the 13 principles of faith. I believe with complete faith that the entire Torah that we have now is that which was given to Moshe, Moses. Principle number nine of the 13 principles of faith. I believe with complete faith that this Torah will not be changed and there will never be another one given by God. Principle number 10, I believe with complete faith that God knows of all of man's deeds and thoughts, as the verse states in Psalms 33, verse 15, quote, He has molded every heart alike, He knows all their deeds. Principle number 11, I believe with complete faith that God rewards those who keep His commandments and punishes those who transgress His commandments, which implies, blessed souls, there are consequences for our actions. Principle number 12 of the 13 principles of faith, I believe with the complete faith in the coming of the Mashiach, which the world calls the Messiah, even though He takes time, I eagerly await His coming every day. Principle number 13 of the 13 principles of faith, I believe with a complete faith that the dead will be brought back to life when it will be the will of the Creator, blessed be His name, and exalted be His remembrance forever and ever. Ellen, these 13 principles of faith to me are just in another ballpark in terms of in relation to what I read briefly from Hebrews 11:1. Perhaps if you can explain to me, I don't even really understand what Hebrews 11:1 is trying to say. And the second question is, of those 13 principles, and I'll be happy to read any of those back if I read them too quickly, which ones Noahides should believe, if all, and if you think it would be a good idea for them to leave in any of them or part of them?
Well, Hebrews' definition of faith basically means that you don't need facts or any kind of evidence to believe in your whatever idol you want to worship. Facts are immaterial. And as far as the 13 principles of faith, I think that Noahides need to believe in the 613 principles of faith outlined in the Torah. You mm-hmm. can't discount a single one of them.
Okay, so you're saying that they should just embrace the whole system, and
not that all the laws are given to them, of course, but
right.
they have to understand that the 13 principles of faith is there's a lot of things like that in some other religions, but Yeah, they just need to understand that the Torah is, you know, there's not a single letter in the Torah that doesn't belong there, and that all the 613 mitzvot, you know, should be, if not applicable to Noahides, they should be respected.
True. I hear you, and I agree, because I cannot tell. I know for myself, and by the way, we have a another, I think it's Doris from Houston calling in, so I'm just going to hold it for 1 second. Doris, thank you for your patience. For myself, again, Rambam is considered to be, he's known as the Nesher Golda, the great eagle for the nation of Israel in terms of Torah instruction. And for myself, I adhere to them. But the truth is, the truth of the matter is that I don't think of those principles every day, just as like I don't think of every commandment of the 613. But it's sort of like we have various systems of learning within Jewish Torah learning where we recapitulate various types of styles of learning reflecting certain principles. Like, for instance, Hillel was once asked, could you teach me the Torah? I think an individual asked him, a Ben Noah asked him, can you teach me the Torah standing on one leg? He said, yes. That which you do not like, do not do unto others. So, I mean, of course, that is not the whole Torah, but he was saying that's basically the guiding principle. Don't harm people, and just as you don't want to be harmed by other people. So obviously, that's not the only commandment of the Torah, but that's a sort of like a principle, a recapitulation that's brought down in the Talmud that Hillel, who was one of the leaders of the Jewish people, during the time that the Second Temple stood in the last 60-odd years before it was destroyed, a second time, unfortunately, by the Roman Empire, that he was able to recapitulate. But I do appreciate your feedback, because I personally did not know the answer to that. And anyone out there listening, I hope you're taking heed. We now have Doris. Is that you, Doris, from Texas?
Yes.
Good morning. It's a pleasure, pleasure to have
morning.
You. We have Alan C. Swan as well. And we are talking about faith. Doris, what is your take on faith? Because we basically contrasted a very brief quote from Hebrews 11, chapter 11, verse 1, and I myself do not adhere, again, not to insult anyone, but as an Israelite, we only hold by the five books of Moses and the 24 books of what is known as the Tanakh, which includes the prophets and the holy writings, because that is our tradition. But what is your particular take? I know you've done a lot of soul-searching and spiritual journeying. What is your take on the concept of faith?
My concept of faith is just to believe with my heart. Right now, it's just to believe with my heart. It's like I just know that God is watching over me, and he keeps reminding me that when the prophet was only sent to two widows, and by faith they were saved. You know, the prophet, the one, he gave her oil to sell, and she did not die. And I forgot about the other widow at this point, but right now it's just like I know he's watched over me, and I know he's going to continue to watch over me.
Amen. That's I agree with you. And also that the prophet Habakkuk talked about the idea of how a righteous person lives by your faith. So the very fact that any person, believes that there is a personal interaction between Creator and us as created beings, his children, this is encountered for the person as righteousness. Now, going further into the book, to describe into the overview by Alan, that's what we're doing today on today's program, Doris, is that we read segments from Alan's book, which is basically trying to re-educate Western civilization-minded like minds to understand that there were civilizations before. In fact, there were Torah civilizations, not only for the Jewish people, but for the children of Noah, the other descendants outside of the seed of Shem, who had a faith called the Seven Iron Commandments. So we're going to go into now this idea of faith, as Alan wrote about it, to describe faith as, quote, the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen, means to strongly believe in something you know little, if anything, about, to base your beliefs on something lacking in empirical evidence, which is an approach used in Christian theology. However, in Judaic teachings, although the Hebrew word emunah is also translated as faith, the best definition would be trust. Amunah does not describe believing in the evidence of things not seen. Amunah, from a Hebrew perspective, is that signifies a state of mind one has not yet at the beginning, but at the end of a process of observation, an experience informed by rational contemplation, a process that results in clear-eyed and unwavering conviction and confidence. And this is quoting Professor Paul Eidelberg from his book, Beyond the Secular Mind. I just also want to bring out that there is another word which is similar to the word emunah, which means faith, which goes amon, which is basically a craftsman, meaning we have a tradition also within the oral Torah tradition of Israel that your faith is like a craft that one must work on, just as one takes a coarse piece of wood after it was chopped down from the middle of the forest as part of a big, bulky, hulky tree, and it can become refined to the point where it can be crafted into a pencil, it can be crafted into a baseball bat, it can be crafted into a desk or a table or a bed frame, that there's a process of taking what could be just simple understanding of Creator, which is very important. I don't want to minimize that type of consciousness, but also to integrate within it the knowledge of the Torah in the oral and written Torah traditions, whether you're a Jew or a Noahide, and as well to synthesize with that with also your everyday living experiences. So there's the life you're living, and integrate with that your simple faith in the Creator and the creation that is before you, and the knowledge that you hopefully will try to attain in your lifetime, and integrating that with those instances in life where everything seems to be the opposite of what you've experienced previously, everything seems to be the opposite of what you learned, everything that seems to be the opposite of what you're conscious of, but to still realize that there is a personal Creator watching over you. Now, at Mount Sinai, continuing into Alan's book, the entire nation of Israel was witness to the giving of the Decalogue, which I guess the world would call the Ten Commandments, for they all saw the cloud of flame and heard the voice proclaim, quote, I, Hashem, shall be your God. This was at the time when all of Israel, under the leadership of Moses, the mighty Levite prophet, were sitting at the foot of Mount Sinai. And unlike other belief systems or religions, as Alan wrote it in quotation marks, Judaism was not created by a single charismatic individual. Moses had none of the charisma that Max Weber spoke of. In fact, Moses had a speech defect, and also he had feelings of inadequacy for the very role that made him a very uncharismatic leader. In fact, perhaps he could be considered one of the most uncharismatic leaders in history, but yet it was because of his humility, which is not mentioned in the book. We learned several weeks ago that the Most High told Moses, which must have been probably a moment of ambivalence for Moshe, because he was the scribe and the Creator was the dictator of divine instruction, to write that Moses was the most humble man on the face of the earth. Humility can empower us to overcome lack of certain types of character traits, whether it be self-esteem or even pronunciation, although it is also taught later on that Moses was healed as the rest of the Israelites were healed at the time of the giving of the Torah, so it would be in a higher state of conscience, because we do need healthy bodies to the greatest possible extent we can in order to receive the Torah. Now I'm going to go to the end of this page here, and then I'll turn to Alan and Doris for feedback. The Torah was written so that ancient Bronze Age shepherds would understand its basic principles, which is basically going back to the times of the Israelites and Isaac and Jacob, Abraham, even though they did not have the knowledge of living in today's modern society. The Torah is written simply that people who are not blessed with high intelligence can understand it. That's right. And also we understand too, blessed souls, not that I can cite you a teaching from Torah, but we don't believe within the Jewish community that intelligence is a static quotient that you can place above anyone's head to say he or she has an IQ of 100. If you keep on learning Torah and coupled with that keep on doing acts of kindness, your social intelligence will grow, your kindness intelligence will grow, and ultimately the cherry on top is that your mind also becomes more purified to receive more pristine ideas of spirituality, and just as important and the essential thing is how to carry out and fulfill the laws of the Torah to make it a just society. Modern academics can grasp the science fiction concept of looking at God being within a different dimension, a dimension beyond time and space. The quote-unquote science fiction approach that Alan wrote, which is used by Richard Dawkins himself in his book of, and I have to make a caveat here, I'm not going to pronounce the name of this title, Alan, because I recently heard from a Rav, the Rav Soloveitchik, Joseph Soloveitchik, mentioned that to mention the Creator in an unflattering way can be considered an act of blaspheming the Creator. So I'm not even going to say the name of Dawkins' book. Maybe you might feel you can. I don't feel I can at this point. And also in the chapter, while there was almost certainly is no, and I'm going to leave it blank and people can understand Dawkins as an atheist, what he was trying to say. Dawkins waxes sublime about the creation of the universe, building up from the quote-unquote Big Bang to the evolution of man. I bit off a lot, Alan, but I think you're big enough to respond to some of the things, agreeing or disagreeing or embellishing what points you think need embellishing.
Well, you know, you're talking about intelligence. One of the hallmarks in today's society of being quote-unquote intelligent is how much you are against the Torah and preferably being an atheist. To many of the intellectuals, that is a sign of intelligence. Which is totally backwards from what I believe, of course. But this, you know, that is the problem that we have in our society, the whole deal. That was the thing that Richard Hofstadler pointed out, I think, in that epigraph at the beginning of the overview, that, you know, you can be very intelligent, but an intellectual who's able to, you know, understand things, put things together, look outside the box, it has a wide range of intelligence. You know, you don't. I've known, you know, car mechanics out in the sticks who were intellectuals because they could question, they could put things together, they understood stuff. So, you know, our society's view of intelligence, I think, is overrated. And like you said, you know, and I think the we talked about this the other day. You know, someone, you should not look down upon someone who's less intelligent than you because they might be a much better person who are doing good deeds and have a higher standing than you are. You know, be a better person than you are because they do what they're supposed to.
Right. Like the old stereotype of the farmer. You know, the old huckleberry, drinking some old-fashioned gin from behind the barn. Well, I've lived on farms for a couple years of my life, and I found farmers to be the most down-to-earth, intelligent, philosophical, economical, mathematical, scientific individuals that you mentioned the Joe Pack, the Joe Six-Pack American. I'd say the Blackberry, iPhone, laptop, high-definition television viewer of world events.
Gadget-oriented society.
Yeah, our gadget. I would say the average farmer going back to the hills is one of the most intelligent form of human beings I have met in my lifetime because their plasticity in terms of dealing with the challenges of running a farm and some of the most faith-based individuals I've ever met who are not ashamed to roll up their sleeves and tackle a problem. They just don't rely on their faith. They actually try to implement a human thought-out solution to a problem. Like, what do you do when the pipes are frozen at 1 o'clock in the morning and you're trying to pump milk into a truck? You know, you just can't push a BlackBerry or your smartphone to melt the ice. Doris, any take on these matters?
I find it the same way in the hood. I find that ingenuity and creativity is also in the hood. They, you know, may not have the education but they're able to comprehend what's going on in the environment. They're able to see that's not said on the news and understand that too. But I go back to what you said about faith. Working, like he showed, like when they went to in the Exodus and God showed them fire by night and smoke by day. That was evidence of God. And that when God shows us that and he's he's trying to show us that, yes, I am real, I am here, and that we as human beings, all of us, God shows us things like that all the time in various degrees, that, yes, I'm here and I am real. And when we see that, our faith grows, but then we go back to the fear factor. Intellectual is like a human perspective. It has nothing to do with actually what that other human being is capable of doing. It's like you don't have a degree. Nowadays, you don't have a degree. Therefore, you can't have the intelligence to figure this out for yourself. I find that true when you look at scientists and say that, well, the ancient people couldn't have understood how they built that because they didn't have the machinery or the intellect as we do. Therefore, the ancient people could not it must have been an accident how they designed it. You know.
Yeah, I agree. I live in Crown Heights. We are part of the hood as well. And yeah, from my culture, Doris, we call it Chochmas Chaim. You get, under certain circumstances, Hashem, God, gives you the ability to catch the wisdom of life even before a book is open, for whatever reasons in the culture that you're raised up in. I mean, this is what I grew up in with my grandparents and my parents. I was married to see to see both sides of the family, my mother's parents and my father's parents, people who are very simple people but very intelligent in terms of how to live under difficult circumstances, how to survive the Depression era, how to survive open acts of anti-Semitism. And I felt that, you know, my parents are both intelligent people. They have 7 degrees between them. They have 3 master's degrees and 4 undergraduate degrees. But I say that because they become more modernized, they were a little less flexible than their parents. My parents are extremely, also very wise people, but I see that sometimes the books got in the way, and the intellectualization of life sometimes was at the cost of a certain wisdom of life that we see in native peoples and except people living in say like the hood and Middle Eastern culture, which I've experienced. Believe it or not, Doris and Alan and Doris, we've come to the end of the show because these are just basically brief presentations because I have to run and huff and puff off to work. Before we sign off, Alan, would you like to make any concluding remarks before we end off with our flagship ending music by Brother David Dome?
No, I'll let you have it.
Doris, anything you'd like to mention to our blessed listening audience before we sign off?
Oh, no, I'm okay.
Okay, I'd like to thank you. Thank you for coming on for the brief moment. Thank you, Alan. And hopefully next week we'll continue. Again, we're taking a little bit of bite out of Alan's book. We're not in any rush because this is the type of book you don't want to just read. It's not something you take on the beach. It's something you take into the laboratory of your mind. And again, the name of this book, bless us, is Secular by Design. A philosophy of Noahide laws and observances. We read from page 28 from Overview, Part 1, and now we're going to end off with Brother David Dome. Will help us get back home. To realize our divine image is to help us govern scrimmage. Our divine, our Tzelem Elohim is no dream. Blessed souls, you have to know you've got to be good because you can be good because the Tevah Tov Lahayti with the nature of the good to do good because the Creator is the source of all goodness. And I know it's a struggle to be good, but we can be good if we really know that we should. And sometimes reality kicks in sometimes, and hopefully this reality sometimes, which is the song we're ending off today by David Dome, hopefully be presented to you in a way of a Havachad, one love, Goralacha, one destiny, Kulana for all us, but Darchi Shom, Darchi Nom, and a peaceful and pleasant way, Laham Sheikh, to be continued by the Hashem Yisrael with the help of the Most High. Take care, everyone.
Die.